So we just finished up the Super Bowl here not that long in America. Well, all over the world. They have the Super Bowl everywhere. I know we got listeners all over the world, but they got the Super Bowl everywhere. And during the Super Bowl, they had so many sports gambling commercials. It's amazing, especially the fact that the Super Bowl was in Las Vegas this year. Andy, you told me that you think that all of this talk about sports gambling makes us a society of modern pagans, and I'm really interested to hear what you think about that and why.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's just phenomenal how much... Yeah, I mean, it used to be a big deal. Some of us who grew up, you know, in the 80s and 90s, and particularly when baseball was at the end of its golden era of all golden eras, and you still had baseball cards, and before the steroid era, and all the numbers really mattered. And then, of course, the purity of baseball, that you could never gamble on it. And Pete Rose gambles on baseball, the great hits leader of all time, and he's, you know, he's kicked out of baseball, can't even be on the Hall of Fame about it. And so, you know, and now, my gosh, and there used to be talk like never will Las Vegas have a professional sports team because it would be too much cohabitation with gambling, and it would just ruin sport in America if there was ever a franchise in Las Vegas. And now Las Vegas is soon to have three out of the four big American sports, and everywhere, like every commercial on almost every, well, not every, but just about every commercial on any sports telecast is now about, you know, gambling, about in-game gambling, prop bets, all of this stuff. And there was everywhere around the Super Bowl. And, you know, there was a time when TV came about in the 1950s. I can't remember that. There was a game show on, and someone won, like, an extraordinary amount of money in the 1950s, like 30 grand or something like that. I should know this reference. And there were also like there were articles in the Christian Century about how unethical this is, how terrible it is, that there was that this was a, game shows were a form of gambling, and Protestants could not support this. Like, talk about upending the Protestant work ethic. Like, if you could gamble, that was the direct opposition to the Protestant work ethic.
Well,
and
one
that
of the
was
greatest,
a huge, huge problem.
One of the greatest Simpsons lines of all time. I don't know if you remember this episode from the 90s when Ned Flanders, who's the neighborhood evangelical, his house gets destroyed with a hurricane. And then his wife tells everybody that they didn't have insurance on their house because Ned believed it was a form of gambling. Like, that's it. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can see how far we've come, you know, like the American Protestant ethos is just disappearing as and maybe it was only a kind of puritanical, Puritan-based kind of American vision that was against it to begin with. I think in like the UK, they've been betting on, like, didn't Rory McIlroy's dad, like, bet that when he was, like, 3 years old that he'd win the Open Championship someday and then, like, cash that in for millions of dollars? So, you know, people in the UK have been betting for a long time. But it's fascinating. And then this does take me back to good old Blaise Pascal, the 17th century philosopher who, you know, is fascinating and is known as, like, one of the great modern converts of the church history. And Pascal had this interesting dynamic. Like, everyone remembers from Pascal his wager. I don't know, Derek, you know Pascal's wager.
Yeah, the wager was, like, if heaven and hell exist, then it's really good to believe. But if heaven and hell don't exist, you're not losing anything necessarily by still believing. Is my memory correct on that?
Yeah, that is exactly how we think Pascal's wager goes, that we think that you have two options here. You either bet there is a God, and if you find out there isn't a God and there's no eternity, well, you haven't lost too much. But if you bet no God and then you die and you find out there is a God and there is heaven, well, then you are completely bleeped. I mean, you know, to go back to a callback to an earlier podcast and use a word that you shouldn't, you know, that we said we can now use in at the end of the polite society, but you're screwed. Like, you're, that's bad. That's how we usually view Pascal's wager. It's not actually Pascal's wager. Cause I mean, that's in many ways a dumb point. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot you lose. You lose all sorts of movements towards pleasure and, you know, different ways of living outside certain moral codes that you lose. Pascal's wager is actually embedded in his conflicts between Descartes and Michel de Montaigne. And Montaigne is the guy who creates happiness, essentially. I mean, that's a crazy thing, actually, to say. But he is the guy who forms our views of what it means to be a happy person. It means to go to your chateau and just enjoy dancing when you're dancing, sleeping when you sleep. That the whole point of life is to be happy. And Pascal tried it, and he realized it doesn't work. You can't. And I think we do live in a society right now of a bunch of failed happiness seekers. I think one of the ways you can name the first three decades of the 21st century is as deeply sad times. That these have been sad decades, the first three decades of the 21st century. And there's a lot of reasons for that, like some kind of structural political reasons that it's been such sad times. But I also think part of the reason is that we have so fully bet on happiness that we're pretty sad because we think that the whole point of human life is to be happy, and yet we could never get there. And Pascal told us in the 17th century, it never happened. You'd never be able to be happy. And he says an example of this, to take us back to DraftKings, is betting. And Pascal became a major, like essentially, for lack of a better word, a playboy gambler. Like he was out there playing the ponies all the time. And he realized there was an inherent problem with this, that the reason that you play the ponies, the reason that you gamble, is because what you're going for here is to win to get your winnings and your winnings to release you from the drive. Like you think to yourself, if I win, then I can pay off the car. If I win, then I can do this. Like it will move you into a state of rest if you win. If you can actually win, it will move you into a state of this. So the same reason why playing blackjack with your, you know, 7-year-old daughter for potato chips sucks, or even with your own money, like it's no fun. But also when the gamble is someone else's money and it's your own money that you're putting up and you can win someone else's money, it becomes very intriguing because it moves you into these senses that if you can win, you can release yourself from the drives and get rest. But Pascal's point is, from playing and from winning, is that once you win, you never slide into rest. That as soon as you accept your winnings and you leave the table, if you can actually push yourself back from the gambling table, off the app, in the bet, all of a sudden you start getting the call to get back, to do it again, to gamble, that everything else becomes quite blasé and you have to have the thrill of gambling. So it creates this situation for you that you can never find the happiness that you seek, that you can never do that. And this is what Pascal believes is modern paganism. This drive towards gambling for happiness, that always trying to be happy, is a certain form of modern paganism, as is a kind of Descartes sense that you can rationalize the world, that you can get a rational system that can control the world. He thinks these become two different forms of modern paganism. What his wager is his wager is that you are a fundamentally unhappy creature, and there's no way for you to escape the fact that you are unhappy. Not because he hates people, but because he thinks you are a self, which Montaigne will tell you are a self, but you are also a soul. And because you are self and soul, you will always be fundamentally unhappy because you can never get the fulfillment. Your soul can never rest, a la Augustine, till it rests in God. So you will always be unhappy until you find that. Pascal's wager is that if you will, instead of trying to gamble your way out of your unhappiness, trying to distract yourself by playing the ponies over and over again or betting on your fantasy team over and over and over again, if you will instead bear the weight of your unhappiness and turn it over to God, lean into your unhappiness, make a confession to it, you will find, this is his bet, this is his night of fire, you will find the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, who meets you there, who ministers to you there, who brings life out of your out of your death. And so this is the problem I have with DraftKings. The issue with DraftKings is it reveals that as such happiness sinkers that we are fundamentally unhappy. And gambling and the ubiquitousness of gambling becomes a way to medicate, to numb the complete burden we have of being unhappy happiness seekers. It's a way to become distracted from our unhappiness, which only makes us deeply to the bone more and more unhappy.
I also feel like there's some connection here. If you were to get in a time machine and go back in time to, like, let's say 2003 or 2004, and I could tell my 20-whatever-year-old self, like, in so many years, you're going to have every single album ever made, every single song ever made, every single movie ever made, every single TV show ever made available at your disposal whenever you want, and you're still going to be bored, I would have not have believed you. But I find that that happens more often than, like, I'd like to admit. Like, I have infinite number of possibilities of things I could be doing in my free time, and yet there are times when I'm still bored and I'm still, like, you know, just like, oh, this kind of sucks, or
yeah, and
whatever.
The boredom, like, is almost worse. The boredom almost pinches more. In some sense, it's a heavier kind of boredom because you have everything at your disposal and yet you're still deeply unsatisfied. And this is Pascal's point. The reason for that is because you are a self, of course, but you can't satisfy yourself. There's part of you that is soul. And as soul, you yearn for a deeper sense of rest in God, and just be able to stream constantly entertaining shows does not fulfill the reality of your soul. And it may actually, as certain forms of what do they call it, like same day gambling, or what is it called, it's like
same day or in-game bets and that kind of stuff.
Like in-game bets and all that.
And daily fantasy sports. And
daily fantasy. And, like, yeah. Daily fantasy gambling. It may be just, it may make you more miserable. It keeps you from having to confront the stark reality that you are deeply unhappy. So it does become a certain kind of medication to that. But it then makes the existential terror maybe even pinch further.
So what I'm hearing you say is that Pascal says the way out of this, and this is something that maybe we're not looking at as much in a cultural context right now, the way out of this is just owning your own boredom and the sense that external stuff can't fill that hole inside of you. Is that kind of what Pascal is saying, or is it?
The only way, this is a very, this is why what Kierkegaard essentially does is read Pascal and Luther and then does his own genius thing with them. But the only way out of this existential terror is the knight's move, to use now Kierkegaard's language, is that you have to leap into your unhappiness and trust that you are going to find the goodness of God within it. So instead of even using religion as a way, to anesthetize your unhappiness, instead of using the beautiful as a way, so for Kierkegaard, you can't use the aesthetic, you can't use the ethical, you can't use religion one as just a kind of religious system. You can only jump in to the abyss. You can only take the knight's move. And if you do that, if you turn into that, if you make confessions of your unhappiness, of the deep longing of your soul, the restlessness of your soul, it's only then that you may find a great presence that's outside of you, that saves you, that meets you, that comes to you. But one of the realities, it's just no wonder that in a cultural context of soul erosion, where our souls are eroded, where we don't even think of ourselves as having soul, we just think of ourselves as on projects of the self, it's no wonder we become addicted to gambling. But I mean, Pascal would just say, of course, because you have to continue to distract yourself with some kind of great emotive experience, some kind of great moment of waiting for the card to flip or to see if they cover the spread. And that gives you enough significance and enough meaning to ignore the fact that you are a soul who is deeply unhappy and must give itself over to its unhappiness and may find a great presence that brings joy, that brings life and joy and connection and meaning through the reality that you don't have all you need, that your hands are empty, that in the great night's move of jumping into the abyss and surrendering to it, you may find a great presence. Instead, we say, use religion, use the aesthetic, use all sorts of access to all those songs, keep putting them in your ear over and over again, keep going, keep betting, keep gambling, and then never face the fact that you actually are deeply unhappy. And then we see people just come to the limit of their energy. And so they become utterly burnt out, or they take a great violent act because they're just so deeply frustrated and angry. Because at one level, not to minimize this, but at one level, their soul is eroded to the point where all meaning, all hope, all humanity is lost.
So in the church, how do we minister to people and help them take that jump?
Well, all the church can be. The question is religion, and therefore your preaching, your church, a place for happiness seekers to find happiness or to find a supplement to all the other ways they're happiness. So to say, you actually get a little added value if you add a little religion here. Like that can even help you, or it can protect you from any kind of bad thing upending your happiness. Or is there a way that our ministries are to speak to the idolatry of happiness? Like no one should be against happiness. If you get happiness, take happiness. But to say to people, a life worth living is not a life of happiness. That the way we find the presence of God and the way we even find what saves us is by the honest confessions of our deepest longings. That this is such a radically different story that if you will give over your unhappiness to God, if you will confess your great need, that our great wager as a church, our great wager in living life together is that you are going to find a great presence there. And that presence is going to come to you in the name of Yahweh, or going to come to you in the name, in the face of Jesus Christ is our great wager. But that's our wager. All we do as a community, as a church, is we have no religious products that can add value to your life. We have no great message that can make you fulfilled in a kind of happiness way forever. But we do have a route. We do have a path. We do have a pilgrim's path to lean into your sorrows, to make your confessions of your unhappiness, to take on practices that lean towards soul. And we believe that you will be met by something grand and deep. To me, that's the whole point of this. Like the church, the church does something incredibly countercultural when it says, of course you are self and we will honor yourself, but we will also teach you to, in fear and trembling, in grief and great joy, make confessions that you are also a soul, that your soul is restless until it finds its rest in God. And that is not a religious statement. That is a statement of finding God in the void, of finding God coming to you, ministering to you, out of all your experiences of nothingness and loss.
When Church Stops Working, featuring Dr. Andy Root, is produced by me, Derek Tronsgaard, with special thanks to our sponsor, Baker Publishing. You can get Andy's brand new book called When Church Stops Working on Amazon or wherever else you get your books. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time for another round of When Church Stops Working.